and the ones I destroyed. I was rewarded often, and that made me stronger. Maria was a good judge of character. She decided to put me in charge of the others, as if I were being promoted. It suited my nature exactly. The casualties went down dramatically, and our numbers swelled to hover around 20. This was considerable for the cautious times we lived in. My ability, as yet undefined, to control the emotional atmosphere around me was vitally effective. We soon began to work together in a way that newborn vampires had never cooperated before. Even Maria, Nettie, and Lucy were able to work together more easily. Maria grew quite fond of me. She began to depend upon me. And, in some ways, I worshipped the ground she walked on. I had no idea that any other life was possible. Maria told us this was the way things were, and we believed. She asked me to tell her when my brothers and I were ready to fight, and I was eager to prove myself. I pulled together an army of 23 in the end. 23 unbelievably strong new vampires, organized and skilled as no others before. Maria was ecstatic. We crept down toward Monterey, her former home, and she unleashed us on her enemies. They had only 9 newborns at the time, and a pair of older vampires controlling them. We took them down more easily than Maria could believe, losing only 4 in the process. It was an unheard-of margin of victory. And we were well-trained. We did it without attracting notice. The city changed hands without any human being aware. Success made Maria greedy. It wasn't long before she began to eye other cities. That first year, she extended her control to cover most of Texas and northern Mexico. Then the others came from the south to dislodge her. He brushed 2 fingers along the faint pattern of scars on his arm. The fighting was intense. Many began to worry that the Volturi would return. Of the original 23, I was the only one to survive the first 18 months. We both won and lost. Nettie and Lucy turned on Maria eventually, but that one we won. Maria and I were able to hold on to Monterey. It quieted a little, though the wars continued. The idea of conquest was dying out. It was mostly vengeance and feuding now. So many had lost their partners, and that is something our kind does not forgive. Maria and I always kept a dozen or so newborns ready. They meant little to us. They were pawns. They were disposable. When they outgrew their usefulness, we did dispose of them. My life continued in the same violent pattern, and the years passed. I was sick of it all for a very long time before anything changed. Decades later, I developed a friendship with a newborn who'd remained useful and survived his first 3 years against the odds. His name was Peter. I liked Peter. He was civilized. I suppose that's the right word. He didn't enjoy the fight, though he was good at it. He was assigned to deal with the newborns, babysit them, you could say. It was a full-time job. And then it was time to purge again. The newborns were outgrowing their strength. They were due to be replaced. Peter was supposed to help me dispose of them. We took them aside individually, you see, one by one. It was always a very long night. This time, he tried to convince me that a few had potential. But Maria had instructed that we get rid of them all. I told him no. We were about halfway through, and I could feel that it was taking a great toll on Peter. I was trying to decide whether or not I should send him away and finish up myself as I called out the next victim. To my surprise, he was suddenly angry, furious. I braced for whatever his mood might foreshadow. He was a good fighter, but he was never a match for me. The newborn I'd summoned was a female, just past her year mark. Her name was Charlotte. His feelings changed when she came into view. They gave him away. He yelled for her to run, and he bolted after her. I could have pursued them, but I didn't. I felt averse to destroying him. Maria was irritated with me for that. 5 years later, Peter snuck back from me. he picked a good day to arrive. Maria was mystified by my ever-deteriorating frame of mind. She'd never felt a moment's depression, and I wondered why I was different. I began to notice a change in her emotions when she was near me. Sometimes there was fear and malice, the same feelings that had given me advance warning when Nettie and Lucy struck. I was preparing myself to destroy my only ally, the core of my existence, when Peter returned. Peter told me about his new life with Charlotte, told me about options I'd never dreamed I'd had. In 5 years, they'd never had a fight, though they'd met many others in the North, others who could coexist without the constant mayhem. In one conversation, he had me convinced. I was ready to go, and somewhat relieved I wouldn't have to kill Maria. I'd been her companion for as many years as Carlyle and Edward have been together, yet the bond between us was nowhere near as strong. When you live for the fight, for the blood, the relationships you form are tenuous and easily broken. I walked away without a backward glance. I traveled with Peter and Charlotte for a few years, getting the feel of this new, more peaceful world. But the depression didn't fade. I didn't understand what was wrong with me, until Peter noticed that it was always worse after I'd hunted. I contemplated that. In so many years of slaughter and carnage, I'd lost nearly all of my humanity. I was undeniably a nightmare, a monster of the grisliest kind. Yet each time I found another human victim, I would feel a faint prick of remembrance for that other life, watching their eyes widen in wonder at my beauty. I could see Maria and the others in my head, what they had looked like to me the last night that I was Jasper Whitlock. It was stronger for me, this borrowed memory, than it was for anyone else, because I could feel everything my prey was feeling, and I lived their emotions as I killed them. You've experienced the way I can manipulate the emotions around myself, Bella. But I wonder if you realize how the feelings in a room affect me. I live every day in a climate of emotion. For the first century of my life, I lived in a world of bloodthirsty vengeance. Hate was my constant companion. It eased some when I left Maria, but I still had to feel the horror and fear of my prey. It began to be too much. The depression got worse, and I wandered away from Peter and Charlotte. Civilized as they were, they didn't feel the same aversion I was beginning to feel. They only wanted peace from the fight. I was so wearied by killing anyone, even mere humans. Yet I had to keep killing. What choice did I have? I tried to kill less often, but I would get too thirsty and I would give in. After a century of instant gratification, I found self-discipline challenging. I still haven't perfected that. Jasper was lost in the story, as was I. It surprised me when his desolate expression smoothed into a peaceful smile. I was in Philadelphia. There was a storm, and I was out during the day, something I was not completely comfortable with yet. I knew standing in the rain would attract attention, so I ducked into a little half-empty diner. My eyes were dark enough that no one would notice them, though this meant I was thirsty, and that worried me a little. She was there, expecting me, naturally, he chuckled once. She hopped down from the high stool at the counter as soon as I walked in and came directly toward me. It shocked me. I was not sure if she meant to attack. That's the only interpretation of her behavior my past had to offer. But she was smiling, and the emotions that were emanating from her were like nothing I'd ever felt before. "You've kept me waiting a long time," she said. I didn't realize Alice had come to stand behind me again. "And you ducked your head like a good southern gentleman and said, 'I'm sorry, ma'am.'" Alice laughed at the memory. Jasper smiled down at her. "You held out your hand," and I took it without stopping to make sense of what I was doing. For the first time in almost a century, I felt hope. Jasper took Alice's hand as he spoke. Alice grinned. "I was just relieved. I thought you were never going to show up. They smiled at each other for a long moment, and then Jasper looked back to me, the soft expression lingering. Alice told me what she'd seen of Carlyle and his family. I could hardly believe that such an existence was possible. But Alice made me optimistic, so we went to find them. Scared the hell out of them, too, Edward said, rolling his eyes at Jasper before turning to me to explain. Emmett and I were away hunting. Jasper shows up, covered in battle scars, towing this little freak. He nudged Alice playfully, who greets them all by name, knows everything about them, and wants to know which room she can move into. Alice and Jasper laughed in harmony, soprano and bass. When I got home, all my things were in the garage, Edward continued. Alice shrugged. Your room had the best view. They all laughed together now. That's a nice story, I said. Three pairs of eyes questioned my sanity. I mean the last part, I defended myself. The happy ending with Alice. Alice has made all the difference, Jasper agreed. This is a climate I enjoy. But the momentary pause in the stress couldn't last. An army, Alice whispered. Why didn't you tell me? The others were intent again, their eyes locked on Jasper's face. I thought I must be interpreting the signs incorrectly. Because where is the motive? Why would someone create an army in Seattle? There is no history there. No vendetta. It makes no sense from a conquest standpoint either. No one claims it. Nomads pass through, but there's no one to fight for it. No one to defend it from. But I've seen this before, and there's no other explanation. There is an army of newborn vampires in Seattle. Fewer than 20, I'd guess. The difficult part is that they are totally untrained. Whoever made them, just set them loose. It will only get worse, and it won't be much longer till the Volturi step in. Actually, I'm surprised they've let this go on so long. What can we do? Carlyle asked. If we want to avoid the Volturi's involvement, we will have to destroy the newborns, and we will have to do it very soon. Jasper's face was hard. Knowing his story now, I could guess how this evaluation must disturb him. I can teach you how. It won't be easy in the city. The young ones aren't concerned about secrecy, but we will have to be. It will limit us in ways that they are not. Maybe we can lure them out. Maybe we won't have to. Edward's voice was bleak. Does it occur to anyone else that the only possible threat in the area that would call for the creation of an army is us? Jasper's eyes narrowed. Carlyle's widened, shocked. Tanya's family is also near, Esme said slowly, unwilling to accept Edward's words. The newborns aren't ravaging Anchorage, Esme. I think we have to consider the idea that we are the targets. They're not coming after us, Alice insisted, and then paused. Or they don't know that they are. Not yet. What is that? Edward asked, curious and tense. What are you remembering? Flickers, Alice said. I can't see a clear picture when I try to see what's going on. Nothing concrete, but I've been getting these strange flashes. Not enough to make sense of. It's as if someone's changing their mind, moving from one course of action to another so quickly that I can't get a good view. Indecision? Jasper asked in disbelief. I don't know. Not indecision, Edward growled. Knowledge. Someone who knows you can't see anything until the decision is made. Someone who is hiding from us, playing with the holes in your vision. Who would know that? Alice whispered. Edward's eyes were hard as ice. Auro knows you as well as you know yourself. But I would see if they decided to come. Unless they didn't want to get their hands dirty. A favor, Rosalie suggested, speaking for the first time. Someone in the south. Someone who already had trouble with the rules. Someone who should have been destroyed is offered a second chance. If they take care of this one small problem, that would explain the Volturi's sluggish response. Why? Carlyle asked, still shocked. There's no reason for the Volturi... It was there, Edward disagreed quietly. I'm surprised it's come to this so soon, because the other thoughts were stronger. In Aro's head, he saw me at his one side, and Alice at his other. The present and the future. Virtual omniscience. The power of the idea intoxicated him. I would have thought it would take him much longer to give up on that plan. He wanted it too much. But there was also the thought of you, Carlyle, of our family, growing stronger and larger. The jealousy and the fear. You having, not more than he had, but still, things that he wanted. He tried not to think about it, but he couldn't hide it completely. The idea of rooting out the competition was there. Besides their own, ours is the largest coven they've ever found. I stared at his face in horror. He'd never told me this, but I guessed I knew why. I could see it in my head now. Aro's dream. Edward and Alice in black, flowing robes. Drifting along at Aro's side, with their eyes cold and blood red. Carlyle interrupted my waking nightmare. They're too committed to their mission. They would never break the rules themselves. It goes against everything they've worked for. They'll clean up afterward. A double betrayal, Edward said in a grim voice. No harm done. Jasper leaned forward, shaking his head. No, Carlyle is right. The Volturi do not break rules. Besides, it's much too sloppy. This person, this threat, they have no idea what they're doing. A first-timer, I'd swear to it. I cannot believe the Volturi are involved, but they will be. They all stared at each other, frozen with stress. Then let's go, Emmett almost roared. What are we waiting for? Carlyle and Edward exchanged a long glance. Edward nodded once. We'll need you to teach us, Jasper, Carlyle finally said. How to destroy them. Carlyle's jaw was hard, but I could see the pain in his eyes as he said the words. No one hated violence more than Carlyle. There was something bothering me, and I couldn't put my finger on it. I was numb, horrified, deathly afraid. And yet, under that, I could feel that I was missing something important, something that would make some sense out of the chaos, that would explain it. We're going to need help, Jasper said. Do you think Tanya's family would be willing? Another 5 mature vampires would make an enormous difference. And then, Kate and Eliezer would be especially advantageous on our side. It would be almost easy with their aid. We'll ask, Carlyle answered. Jasper held out a cell phone. We need to hurry. I'd never seen Carlyle's innate calm so shaken. He took the phone and paced toward the windows. He dialed a number, held the phone to his ear, and laid the other hand against the glass. He stared out into the foggy morning with a pained and ambivalent expression. Edward took my hand and pulled me to the white love seat. I sat beside him, staring at his face while he stared at Carlyle. Carlyle's voice was low and quick, difficult to hear. I heard him greet Tanya, and then he raced through the situation too fast for me to understand much, though I could tell that the Alaskan vampires were not ignorant of what was going on in Seattle. Then something changed in Carlyle's voice. Oh, he said, his voice sharper in surprise. We didn't realize that Irina felt that way. Edward groaned at my side and closed his eyes. Damn it. Damn Laurent to the deepest pit of hell where he belongs. Laurent? I whispered, the blood emptying from my face. But Edward didn't respond, focused on Carlyle's thoughts. My short encounter with Laurent early this spring was not something that had faded or dimmed in my mind. I still remembered every word he'd said before Jacob and his pack had interrupted. I actually came here as a favor to her. Victoria. Laurent had been her first maneuver. She'd sent him to observe, to see how hard it might be to get to me. He hadn't survived the wolves to report back. Though he'd kept up his old ties with Victoria after James's death, he'd also formed new ties and new relationships. He'd gone to live with Tanya's family in Alaska. Tanya, the strawberry blonde, the closest friends the Cullens had in the vampire world, practically extended family. Laurent had been with them for almost a year previous to his death. Carlyle was still talking, his voice not quite pleading, persuasive, but with an edge. Then the edge abruptly won out over the persuasion. "There's no question of that," Carlyle said in a stern voice. "We have a truce. They haven't broken it. And neither will we." "I'm sorry to hear that." "Of course. We'll just have to do our best, alone." Carlyle shut the phone without waiting for an answer. He continued to stare out into the fog. "What's the problem?" Emmett murmured to Edward. "Irina was more involved with our friend Laurent than we knew. She's holding a grudge against the wolves for destroying him to save Bella. She wants..." He paused, looking down at me. "Go on," I said as evenly as I could. His eyes tightened. "She wants revenge. To take down the pack. They would trade their help for our permission." "No!" I gasped. "Don't worry," he told me in a flat voice. "Carlyle would never agree to it." He hesitated, then sighed. "Nor would I. Laurent had it coming." This was almost a growl. "And I still owe the wolves for that." "This isn't good," Jasper said. "It's too even a fight. We'd have the upper hand in skill, but not numbers. We'd win, but at what price?" His tense eyes flashed to Alice's face and away. I wanted to scream out loud as I grasped what Jasper meant. "We would win, but we would lose. Some wouldn't survive." I looked around the room at their faces. Jasper, Alice, Emmett, Rosalie, Esme, Carlyle, Edward, the faces of my family. Chapter 14. Declaration. "You can't be serious," I said Wednesday afternoon. "You've completely lost your mind." "Say whatever you like about me," Alice answered. "The party is still on." I stared at her, my eyes so wide with disbelief, it felt like they might fall out and land on my lunch tray. "Oh, calm down, Bella. There's no reason not to go through with it. Besides, the invitations are already sent." "But the... you... I... insane," I spluttered. "You've already bought my present," she reminded me. "You don't have to do anything but show up." I made an effort to calm myself. With everything that is going on right now, a party is hardly appropriate. "Graduation is what's going on right now. And a party is so appropriate, it's almost passé." "Alice!" She sighed and tried to be serious. "There are a few things we need to get in order now, and that's going to take a little time. As long as we're sitting here waiting, we might as well commemorate the good stuff. You're only going to graduate from high school for the first time once. You don't get to be human again, Bella. This is a once-in-a-lifetime shot." Edward, silent through our little argument, flashed her a warning look. She stuck out her tongue at him. She was right. Her soft voice would never carry over the babble of the cafeteria, and no one would understand the meaning behind her words in any case. "What few things do we need to get in order?" I asked, refusing to be sidetracked. Edward answered in a low voice. "Jasper thinks we could use some help. Tanya's family isn't the only choice we have. Carlyle's trying to track down a few old friends, and Jasper's looking up Peter and Charlotte. He's considering talking to Maria, but no one really wants to involve the Southerners." Alice shuddered delicately. It shouldn't be too hard to convince them to help, he continued. Nobody wants a visit from Italy. But these friends, they're not going to be vegetarians, right? I protested, using the Cullens' tongue-in-cheek nickname for themselves. No, Edward answered, suddenly expressionless. Here, in Forks? They're friends, Alice reassured me. Everything's going to be fine. Don't worry. And then, Jasper has to teach us a few courses on newborn elimination. Edward's eyes brightened at that, and a brief smile flashed across his face. My stomach suddenly felt like it was full of sharp little splinters of ice. When are you going? I asked in a hollow voice. I couldn't stand this. The idea that someone might not come back. What if it was Emmett? So brave and thoughtless that he was never the least bit cautious. Or Esme, so sweet and motherly that I couldn't even imagine her in a fight. Or Alice, so tiny, so fragile looking. Or, but I couldn't even think the name. Consider the possibility. A week, Edward said casually. That ought to give us enough time. The icy splinters twisted uncomfortably in my stomach. I was suddenly nauseated. You look kind of green, Bella, Alice commented. Edward put his arm around me and pulled me tightly against his side. It's going to be fine, Bella. Trust me. Sure, I thought to myself. Trust him. He wasn't the one who was going to have to sit behind and wonder whether or not the core of his existence was going to come home. And then it occurred to me. Maybe I didn't need to sit behind. A week was more than enough time. You're looking for help, I said slowly. Yes? Alice's head cocked to the side as she processed the change in my tone. I looked only at her as I answered. My voice was just slightly louder than a whisper. I could help. Edward's body was suddenly rigid, his arm too tight around me. He exhaled, and the sound was a hiss. But it was Alice, still calm, who answered. That really wouldn't be helpful. Why not? I argued. I could hear the desperation in my voice. 8 is better than 7. There's more than enough time. There's not enough time to make you helpful, Bella, she disagreed coolly. Do you remember how Jasper described the young ones? You'd be no good in a fight. You wouldn't be able to control your instincts, and that would make you an easy target. And then Edward would get hurt trying to protect you. She folded her arms across her chest, pleased with her unassailable logic. And I knew she was right when she put it like that. I slumped in my seat, my sudden hope defeated. Beside me, Edward relaxed. He whispered the reminder in my ear, not because you're afraid. Oh, Alice said, and a blank look crossed her face. Then her expression became surly. I hate last-minute cancellations. So that puts the party attendance list down to 65. 65? My eyes bulged again. I didn't have that many friends. Did I even know that many people? Who canceled? Edward wondered, ignoring me. Renee. What? I gasped. She was going to surprise you for your graduation, but something went wrong. You'll have a message when you get home. For a moment, I just let myself enjoy the relief. Whatever it was that went wrong for my mother, I was eternally grateful to it. If she had come to Forks now, I didn't want to think about it. My head would explode. The message light was flashing when I got home. My feeling of relief flared again as I listened to my mother describe Phil's accident on the ball field. While demonstrating a slide, he tangled up with the catcher and broken his thigh bone. He was entirely dependent on her, and there was no way she could leave him. My mom was still apologizing when the message cut off. Well, that's one, I sighed. One what? Edward asked. One person I don't have to worry about getting killed this week. He rolled his eyes. Why won't you and Alice take this seriously? I demanded. This is serious. He smiled. confidence. Wonderful, I grumbled. I picked up the phone and dialed Renee's number. I knew it would be a long conversation, but I also knew that I wouldn't have to contribute much. I just listened and reassured her every time I could get a word in. I wasn't disappointed, I wasn't mad, I wasn't hurt. She should concentrate on helping Phil get better. I passed on my get well soon to Phil and promised to call her with every single detail from Forks High's generic graduation. Finally, I had to use my desperate need to study for finals to get off the phone. Edward's patience was endless. He waited politely through the whole conversation, just playing with my hair and smiling whenever I looked up. It was probably superficial to notice such things while I had so many more important things to think about, but his smile still knocked the breath out of me. He was so beautiful that it made it hard sometimes to think about anything else. Hard to concentrate on Phil's troubles, or Renee's apologies, or hostile vampire armies. I was only human. As soon as I hung up, I stretched onto my tiptoes to kiss him. He put his hands around my waist and lifted me onto the kitchen counter so I wouldn't have to reach as far. That worked for me. I locked my arms around his neck and melted against his cold chest. Too soon, as usual, he pulled away. I felt my face slip into a pout. He laughed at my expression as he extricated himself from my arms and legs. He leaned against the counter next to me and put one arm lightly around my shoulders. I know you think that I have some kind of perfect, unyielding self-control, but that's not actually the case. I wish, I sighed, and he sighed too. After school tomorrow, he said, changing the subject, I'm going hunting with Carlisle, Esme, and Rosalie. Just for a few hours. We'll stay close. Alice, Jasper, and Emmett should be able to keep you safe. Ugh, I grumbled. Tomorrow was the first day of finals, and it was only a half day. I had calculus and history, the only two challenges in my lineup. So I'd have almost the whole day without him, and nothing to do but worry. I hate being babysat. It's temporary, he promised. Jasper will be bored. Emmett will make fun of me. They'll be on their best behavior. Right, I grumbled. And then it occurred to me that I did have one option besides babysitters. You know, I haven't been to La Push since the bonfire. I watched his face carefully for any change in expression. His eyes tightened the tiniest bit. I'd be safe enough there, I reminded him. He thought about it for a few seconds. You're probably right. His face was calm, but just a little too smooth. I almost asked if he'd rather I stay here, but then I thought of the ribbing Emmett would no doubt dish out, and I changed the subject. Are you thirsty already? I asked, reaching up to stroke the light shadow beneath his eye. His irises were still a deep gold. Not really. He seemed reluctant to answer, and that surprised me. I waited for an explanation. We want to be as strong as possible, he explained, still reluctant. We'll probably hunt again on the way, looking for big game. That makes you stronger? He searched my face for something, but there was nothing to find but curiosity. Yes, he finally said. Human blood makes us the strongest, though only fractionally. Jasper's been thinking about cheating. Adverse as he is to the idea, he's nothing if not practical. But he won't suggest it. He knows what Carlisle will say. Would that help? I asked quietly. It doesn't matter. We aren't going to change who we are. I frowned. If something helped, even the odds. And then I shuddered, realizing I was willing to have a stranger die to protect him. I was horrified at myself, but not entirely able to deny it either. He changed the subject again. That's why they're so strong, of course. The newborns are full of human blood, their own blood reacting to the change. It lingers in the tissues and strengthens them. Their bodies use it up slowly, like Jasper said. the strength starting to wane after about a year. How strong will I be? He grinned. Stronger than I am. Stronger than Emmett? The grin got bigger. Yes. Do me a favor and challenge him to an arm wrestling match. It would be a good experience for him. I laughed. It sounded so ridiculous. Then I sighed and hopped down from the counter, because I really couldn't put it off any longer. I had to cram, and cram hard. Luckily, I had Edward's help, and Edward was an excellent tutor, since he knew absolutely everything. I figured my biggest problem would be just focusing on the tests. If I didn't watch myself, I might end up writing my history essay on the vampire wars of the South. I took a break to call Jacob, and Edward seemed just as comfortable as he had when I was on the phone with Renee. He played with my hair again. Though it was the middle of the afternoon, my call woke Jacob up, and he was grouchy at first. He cheered right up when I asked if I could visit the next day. The Quileute school was already out for the summer, so he told me to come over as early as I could. I was pleased to have an option besides being babysat. There was a tiny bit more dignity in spending the day with Jacob. Some of that dignity was lost when Edward insisted again on delivering me to the borderline, like a child being exchanged by custodial guardians. So how do you feel you did on your exams? Edward asked on the way, making small talk. History was easy, but I don't know about the calculus. It seemed like it was making sense, so that probably means I failed. He laughed. I'm sure you did fine. Or if you're really worried, I could bribe Mr. Varner to give you an A. Thanks, but no thanks. He laughed again, but suddenly stopped when we turned the last bend and saw the red car waiting. He frowned in concentration, and then as he parked the car, he sighed. What's wrong? I asked, my hand on the door. He shook his head. Nothing. His eyes were narrowed as he stared through the windshield toward the other car. I'd seen that look before. You're not listening to Jacob, are you? I accused. It's not easy to ignore someone when he's shouting. Oh. I thought about that for a second. What's he shouting? I whispered. I'm absolutely certain he'll mention it himself, Edward said in a wry tone. I would have pressed the issue, but then Jacob honked his horn. Two quick, impatient honks. That's impolite, Edward growled. That's Jacob, I sighed, and hurried out before Jacob did something to really set Edward's teeth on edge. I waved to Edward before I got into the rabbit, and from that distance, it looked like he was truly upset about the honking thing, or whatever Jacob was thinking about. But my eyes were weak and made mistakes all the time. I wanted Edward to come to me. I wanted to make both of them get out of their cars and shake hands and be friends. Be Edward and Jacob, rather than vampire and werewolf. It was as if I had those two stubborn magnets in my hands again, and I was holding them together, trying to force nature to reverse herself. I sighed and climbed in Jacob's car. Hey, Bells. Jake's tone was cheerful, but his voice dragged. I examined his face as he started down the road, driving a little faster than I did, but slower than Edward, on his way back to La Push. Jacob looked different, maybe even sick. His eyelids drooped and his face was drawn. His shaggy hair stuck out in random directions. It was almost to his chin in some places. Are you all right, Jake? Just tired, he managed to get out before he was overcome by a massive yawn. When he finished, he asked, What do you want to do today? I eyed him for a moment. Let's just hang out at your place for now, I suggested. He didn't look like he was up for much more than that. We can ride our bikes later. Sure, sure, he said, yawning again. Jacob's house was vacant, and that felt strange. I realized I thought of Billy as a nearly permanent fixture there. Where's your dad? Over at the Clearwaters. He's been hanging out there a lot since Harry died. Sue gets lonely. Jacob sat down on the old couch that was no bigger than a love seat and squished himself to the side to make room for me. Oh, that's nice. Poor Sue. Yeah, she's having some trouble, he hesitated. With her kids. Sure, it's gotta be hard on Seth and Leah, losing their dad. Uh-huh, he agreed, lost in thought. He picked up the remote and flipped on the TV without seeming to think about it. He yawned. What's with you, Jake? You're like a zombie. I got about 2 hours of sleep last night, and 4 the night before, he told me. He stretched his long arms slowly, and I could hear the joints crack as he flexed. He settled his left arm along the back of the sofa behind me and slumped back to rest his head against the wall. I'm exhausted. Why aren't you sleeping? I asked. He made a face. Sam's being difficult. He doesn't trust your bloodsuckers. I've been running double shifts for 2 weeks, and nobody's touched me yet. But he still doesn't buy it, so I'm on my own for now. Double shifts? Is this because you're trying to watch out for me? Jake, that's wrong. You need to sleep. I'll be fine. It's no big deal. His eyes were abruptly more alert. Hey, did you ever find out who was in your room? Is there anything new? I ignored the second question. No, we didn't find anything out about my, visitor. Then I'll be around, he said, as his eyes slid closed. Jake, I started to whine. Hey, it's the least I can do. I offered eternal servitude, remember? I'm your slave for life. I don't want a slave. His eyes didn't open. What do you want, Bella? I want my friend, Jacob. And I don't want him half dead, hurting himself in some misguided attempt. He cut me off. Look at it this way. I'm hoping I can track down a vampire I'm allowed to kill, okay? I didn't answer. He looked at me then, peeking at my reaction. Kidding, Bella! I stared at the TV. So, any special plans next week? You're graduating. Wow, that's big. His voice turned flat, and his face, already drawn, looked downright haggard as his eyes closed again. Not in exhaustion this time, but in denial. I realized that graduation still had a horrible significance for him, though my intentions were now disrupted. No special plans, I said carefully, hoping he would hear the reassurance in my words without a more detailed explanation. I didn't want to get into it now. For one thing, he didn't look up for any difficult conversations. For another, I knew he would read too much into my qualms. Well, I do have to go to a graduation party. Mine, I made a disgusted sound. Alice loves parties. And she's invited the whole town to her place the night of. It's going to be horrible. His eyes opened as I spoke, and a relieved smile made his face look less worn. I didn't get an invitation. I'm hurt, he teased. Consider yourself invited. It's supposedly my party, so I should be able to ask who I want. Thanks, he said sarcastically, his eyes slipping closed once more. I wish you would come, I said, without any hope. It would be more fun. For me, I mean. Sure, sure, he mumbled. That would be very wise. His voice trailed off. A few seconds later, he was snoring. Poor Jacob. I studied his dreaming face and liked what I saw. While he slept, every trace of defensiveness and bitterness disappeared, and suddenly he was the boy who had been my very best friend before all the werewolf nonsense had gotten in the way. He looked so much younger. He looked like my Jacob. I nestled into the couch to wait out his nap, hoping he would sleep for a while and make up some of what he'd lost. I flipped through channels, but there wasn't much on. I settled for a cooking show, knowing as I watched that I'd never put that much effort into Charlie's dinner. Jacob continued to snore, getting louder. I turned up the TV. I was strangely relaxed, almost sleepy too. This house felt safer than my own, probably because no one had ever come looking for me here. I curled up on the sofa and thought about taking a nap myself. Maybe I would have, but Jacob's snoring was impossible to tune out. So instead of sleeping, I let my mind wander. Finals were done, and most of them had been a cakewalk. Calculus, the one exception, was behind me, pass or fail. My high school education was over, and I didn't really know how I felt about that. I couldn't look at it objectively, tied up as it was with my human life being over. I wondered how long Edward planned to use this "not because you're scared" excuse. I was going to have to put my foot down sometime. If I were thinking practically, I knew it made more sense to ask Carlisle to change me the second I made it through the graduation line. Forks was becoming nearly as dangerous as a war zone. No, Forks was a war zone. Not to mention, it would be a good excuse to miss the graduation party. I smiled to myself as I thought of that most trivial of reasons for changing. Silly, yet still compelling. But Edward was right. I wasn't quite ready yet. And I didn't want to be practical. I wanted Edward to be the one. It wasn't a rational desire. I was sure that about 2 seconds after someone actually bit me, and the venom started burning through my veins, I really wouldn't care anymore who had done it. So it shouldn't make a difference. It was hard to define, even to myself, why it mattered. There was just something about him being the one to make the choice, to want to keep me enough that he wouldn't just allow me to be changed. He would act to keep me. It was childish, but I liked the idea that his lips would be the last good thing I would feel. Even more embarrassingly, something I would never say aloud. I wanted his venom to poison my system. It would make me belong to him in a tangible, quantifiable way. But I knew he was going to stick to his marriage scheme like glue, because a delay was what he was clearly after, and it was working so far. I tried to imagine telling my parents that I was getting married this summer, telling Angela and Ben and Mike. I couldn't. I couldn't think of the words to say. It would be easier to tell them I was becoming a vampire. And I was sure that at least my mother, were I to tell her every detail of the truth, would be more strenuously opposed to me getting married than to me becoming a vampire. I grimaced to myself as I imagined her horrified expression. Then, for just a second, I saw that same odd vision of Edward and me on a porch swing, wearing clothes from another kind of world, a world where it would surprise no one if I wore his ring on my finger, a simpler place, where love was defined in simpler ways. 1 + 1 = 2. Jacob snorted and rolled to his side. His arm swung off the back of the couch and pinned me against his body. Holy crow, but he was heavy and hot. It was sweltering after just a few seconds. I tried to slide out from under his arm without waking him, but I had to shove a little bit, and when his arm fell off me, his eyes snapped open. He jumped to his feet, looking around anxiously. "What? What?" he asked, disoriented. "It's just me, Jake. Sorry I woke you." He turned to look at me, blinking and confused. "Bella?" "Hey, sleepy." "Oh, man. Did I fall asleep? I'm sorry. How long was I out?" "A few emeralds. I lost count." He flopped back on the couch next to me. "Wow. Sorry about that, really." I patted his hair, trying to smooth the wild disarray. "Don't feel bad. I'm glad you got some sleep." He yawned and stretched. "I'm useless these days. No wonder Billy's always gone. I'm so boring." "You're fine," I assured him. "Let's go outside. I need to walk around or I'll pass out again." "Jake, go back to sleep." "I'm good. I'll call Edward to come pick me up." I patted my pockets as I spoke and realized they were empty. "Shoot, I'll have to borrow your phone. I think I must have left his in the car." I started to unfold myself.
No,
Jacob insisted, grabbing my hand.
No, stay. You hardly ever make it down.
I can't believe I wasted all this time. He pulled me off the couch as he spoke, and then led the way outside, ducking his head as he passed under the doorframe. It had gotten much cooler while Jacob slept. The air was unseasonably cold. There must be a storm on the way. It felt like February, not May. The wintry air seemed to make Jacob more alert. He paced back and forth in front of the house for a minute, dragging me along with him.
I'm an idiot, he muttered to himself.
What's the matter, Jake? So you fell asleep. I shrugged.
I wanted to talk to you. Can't believe this.
Talk to me now, I said. Jacob met my eyes for a second, and then looked away quickly toward the trees. It almost looked like he was blushing, but it was hard to tell with his dark skin. I suddenly remembered what Edward had said when he dropped me off, that Jacob would tell me whatever he was shouting in his head. I started gnawing on my lip.
Look, Jacob said, I was planning to do this a little bit differently.
He laughed, and it sounded like he was laughing at himself.
Smoother, he added. I was going to work up to it, but,
and he looked at the clouds, dimmer as the afternoon progressed.
I'm out of time to work.
He laughed again, nervous. We were still pacing slowly.
What are you talking about? I demanded.
He took a deep breath.
I want to tell you something, and you already know it, but I think I should say it out loud anyway, just so there's never any confusion on the subject.
I planted my feet, and he came to a stop. I took my hand away and folded my arms across my chest. I was suddenly sure that I didn't want to know what he was building up to. Jacob's eyebrows pulled down, throwing his deep-set eyes into shadow. They were pitch black as they bored into mine.
I'm in love with you, Bella, Jacob said in a strong, sure voice. Bella, I love you. And I want you to pick me instead of him. I know you don't feel that way, but I need the truth out there so that you know your options. I wouldn't want a miscommunication to stand in our way.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Eclipse by Stephanie Meyer. Read for you by Ileana Kadushin. With Matt Walters. Chapter 15. Wager. I stared at him for a long minute, speechless. I could not think of one thing to say to him. As he watched my dumbfounded expression, the seriousness left his face.
Okay, he said, grinning. That's all.
Jake, it felt like there was something big sticking in my throat. I tried to clear the obstruction.
I have to go.
I turned, but he grabbed my shoulders and spun me around.
No, wait. I know that, Bella. But look, answer me this, all right? Do you want me to go away and never see you again? Be honest.
It was hard to concentrate on his question, so it took a minute to answer.
No, I don't want that, I finally admitted.
Jacob grinned again.
See?
But I don't want you around for the same reason that you want me around, I objected.
Tell me exactly why you want me around, then.
I thought carefully.
I miss you when you're not there.
When you're happy, I qualified carefully.
It makes me happy.
But I could say the same thing about Charlie, Jacob.
your family. I love you, but I'm not in love with you.
He nodded, unruffled.
But you do want me around.
Yes, I sighed. He was impossible to discourage.
Then I'll stick around.
You're a glutton for punishment, I grumbled.
Yep.
He stroked the tips of his fingers across my right cheek. I slapped his hand away.
Do you think you could behave yourself a little better, at least?
I asked, irritated.
No, I don't. You decide, Bella. You can have me the way I am, bad behavior included, or not at all.
I stared at him, frustrated. That's mean.
So are you.
That pulled me up short, and I took an involuntary step back. He was right. If I wasn't mean, and greedy too, I would tell him I didn't want to be friends and walk away. It was wrong to try to keep my friend when that would hurt him. I didn't know what I was doing here, but I was suddenly sure that it wasn't good.
You're right, I whispered.
He laughed.
I forgive you. Just try not to get too mad at me, because I recently decided that I'm not giving up. There really is something irresistible about a lost cause.
Jacob, I stared into his dark eyes, trying to make him take me seriously.
I love him, Jacob. He's my whole life. You love me too, he reminded me.
He held up his hand when I started to protest.
Not the same way, I know. But he's not your whole life either. Not anymore. Maybe he was once, but he left. And now he's just going to have to deal with the consequence of that choice. Me.
I shook my head. You're impossible. Suddenly he was serious. He took my chin in his hand, holding it firmly so that I couldn't look away from his intent gaze.
Until your heart stops beating, Bella, he said. I'll be here, fighting. Don't forget that you have options.
I don't want options, I disagreed, trying to yank my chin free unsuccessfully.
And my heartbeats are numbered, Jacob. The time is almost gone.
His eyes narrowed.
All the more reason to fight. Fight harder now. While I can, he whispered.
He still had my chin, his fingers holding too tight, till it hurt, and I saw the resolve form abruptly in his eyes. I started to object, but it was too late. His lips crushed mine, stopping my protest. He kissed me angrily, roughly, his other hand gripping tight around the back of my neck, making escape impossible. I shoved against his chest with all my strength, but he didn't even seem to notice. His mouth was soft despite the anger, his lips molding to mine in a warm, unfamiliar way. I grabbed at his face, trying to push it away, failing again. He seemed to notice this time, though, and it aggravated him. His lips forced mine open, and I could feel his hot breath in my mouth. Acting on instinct, I let my hands drop to my side and shut down. I opened my eyes and didn't fight, didn't feel, just waited for him to stop. It worked. The anger seemed to evaporate, and he pulled back to look at me. He pressed his lips softly to mine again, once, twice, a third time. I pretended I was a statue and waited. Finally, he let go of my face and leaned away.
Are you done now?
I asked in an expressionless voice.
Yes,
he sighed. He started to smile, closing his eyes. I pulled my arm back and then let it snap forward, punching him in the mouth with as much power as I could force out of my body. There was a crunching sound.
Ow! Ow! I screamed,
frantically hopping up and down in agony while I clutched my hand to my chest. It was broken. I could feel it. Jacob stared at me in shock.
Are you all right?
No, damn it! You broke my hand!
Bella, you broke your hand.
Now stop dancing around and let me look at it.
Don't touch me. I'm going home right now. I'll get my car, he said calmly. He wasn't even rubbing his jaw like they did in the movies. How pathetic. No thanks, I hissed. I'd rather walk. I turned toward the road. It was only a few miles to the border. As soon as I got away from him, Alice would see me. She'd send somebody to pick me up. Just let me drive you home, Jacob insisted. Unbelievably, he had the nerve to wrap his arm around my waist. I jerked away from him. Fine, I growled. Do. I can't wait to see what Edward does to you. I hope he snaps your neck, you pushy, obnoxious, moronic dog. Jacob rolled his eyes. He walked me to the passenger side of his car and helped me in. When he got on the driver's side, he was whistling. Didn't I hurt you at all? I asked, furious and annoyed. Are you kidding? If you hadn't started screaming, I might not have figured out that you were trying to punch me. I may not be made out of stone, but I'm not that soft. I hate you, Jacob Black. That's good. Hate is a passionate emotion. I'll give you passionate, I muttered under my breath. Murder, the ultimate crime of passion. Oh, come on, he said, all cheery and looking like he was about to start whistling again. That had to be better than kissing a rock. Not even remotely close, I told him coldly. He pursed his lips. You could just be saying that. But I'm not. That seemed to bother him for a second, but then he perked up. You're just mad. I don't have any experience with this kind of thing, but I thought it was pretty incredible myself. Ugh, I groaned. You're going to think about it tonight. When he thinks you're asleep, you'll be thinking about your options. If I think about you tonight, it will be because I'm having a nightmare. He slowed the car to a crawl, turning to stare at me with his dark eyes wide and earnest. Just think about how it could be, Bella, he urged in a soft, eager voice. You wouldn't have to change anything for me. You know Charlie would be happy if you picked me. I could protect you just as well as your vampire can, maybe better. And I would make you happy, Bella. There's so much I could give you that he can't. I'll bet he couldn't even kiss you like that, because he would hurt you. I would never, never hurt you, Bella. I held up my injured hand. He sighed. That wasn't my fault. You should have known better. Jacob, I can't be happy without him. You never tried, he disagreed. When he left, you spent all your energy holding on to him. You could be happy if you let go. You could be happy with me. I don't want to be happy with anyone but him, I insisted. You'll never be able to be as sure of him as you are of me. He left you once. He could do it again. No, he will not, I said through my teeth. The pain of the memory bit into me like the lash of a whip. It made me want to hurt him back. You left me once, I reminded him in a cold voice, thinking of the weeks he'd hidden from me, the words he'd said to me in the woods beside his home. I never did, he argued hotly. They told me I couldn't tell you, that it wasn't safe for you if we were together. But I never left, never. I used to run around your house at night, like I do now, just making sure you were okay. I wasn't about to let him make me feel bad for him now. Take me home. My hand hurts. He sighed and started driving at a normal speed, watching the road. Just think about it, Bella. No, I said stubbornly. You will, tonight, and I'll be thinking about you while you're thinking about me. Like I said, a nightmare. He grinned over at me. You kissed me back. I gasped, unthinkingly balling my hands up into fists again, hissing when my broken hand reacted. Are you okay? He asked. I did not. I think I can tell the difference. Obviously you can't. That was not kissing back. That was trying to get you the hell off of me, you idiot. He laughed a low, throaty laugh. Touchy. Almost overly defensive, I would say. I took a deep breath. There was no point in arguing with him. He would twist anything I said. I concentrated on my hand, trying to stretch out my fingers to ascertain where the broken parts were. Sharp pains stabbed along my knuckles. I groaned. "I'm really sorry about your hand," Jacob said, sounding almost sincere. "Next time you want to hit me, use a baseball bat or a crowbar, okay?" "Don't think I'll forget that," I muttered. I didn't realize where we were going until we were on my road. "Why are you taking me here?" I demanded. He looked at me blankly. "I thought you said you were going home." "Ugh, I guess you can't take me to Edward's house, can you?" I ground my teeth in frustration. Pain twisted across his face, and I could see that this affected him more than anything else I'd said. "This is your home, Bella," he said quietly. "Yes, but do any doctors live here?" I asked, holding up my hand again. "Oh," he thought about that for a minute. "I'll take you to the hospital, or Charlie can. I don't want to go to the hospital. It's embarrassing and unnecessary." He let the rabbit idle in front of the house, deliberating with an unsure expression. Charlie's cruiser was in the driveway. I sighed. "Go home, Jacob." I climbed out of the car awkwardly, heading for the house. The engine cut off behind me, and I was less surprised than annoyed to find Jacob beside me again. "What are you going to do?" he asked. "I am going to get some ice on my hand, and then I am going to call Edward and tell him to come and get me and take me to Carlisle so that he can fix my hand. Then if you're still here, I'm going to go hunt up a crowbar." He didn't answer. He opened the front door and held it for me. We walked silently past the front room where Charlie was lying on the sofa. "Hey, kids," he said, sitting forward. "Nice to see you."